It's hour number three of this week's Blues Before Sunrise. You know, I was thinking, which of the interviews that we've broadcast over the passing years have we not heard in a while? And the thing that occurred to me was the interview with John and Grace Brim. John and Grace Brim were a husband and wife team based in Gary, Indiana, who had a series of blues records during the 1950s. And so I've dusted that off and I'm ready to send it in your direction. We're going to spend 2 hours listening to the conversation and the recordings. It's John and Grace Brim, and the interview was conducted September 27th of 1993.
Go back to the very beginning and tell me when and where you were born.
April 10th, 1922, Hopkinsville, Kentucky. I know, Steve, I just liked the blues from a youngster on up. I always did wanted to meet a lot of guys I never dreamed when I was a teenager that I would meet, like Sonny Boy, Tabor, Big Bill Bronson, Big Meso, and Doc Clayton, them, all them guys that were here at home. And I thought it was the greatest guys ever, man, you know. And the Seabird, and we got Saturday night, we go out of town now. And at that time, you know, in 17, 18, you get in the place anyway, they didn't bother you then much. So I got Doc Quall, and my girlfriend, and everything, we play. She liked the Petey Wicks, so I liked the Big Bill. And we would kind of argue about who's the toughest, you know, and all that kind of stuff back in that time. You know, I was early teenager, and there was a guy named Prentice Cox who could blow real good. And I just got, you know, started blowing hard. Train Puff, Fox Chase, sitting on top of her to the new tunes like those. Well, all of them just had this old, what you call down home style, you know. It wasn't no style then, really, but something about William, you know, coming in 36, with blowing the style he had, you know. Back like the timing music, you know, later years. And it would just blow, we would just blow. And one would blow some, other would blow some. Didn't have a band that said, you know.
Wait, was that the kind of stuff you were blowing when you played harmonica?
Back in that time, yeah. And as I got up around 19, I wanted to play guitar. So a friend at home played guitar and showed me a few points. Then when my mother passed in 41, I come to Indianapolis. I had my grandfather living in Indianapolis. So I came up here to see if I could get better jobs, you know, better opportunity. So that's how I come out and left home. I had to figure out a better chance, you know.
Were you playing music for a living when you went to Indianapolis?
No. No, I wouldn't. I couldn't play no guitar much. I got my first guitar in Indianapolis.
So you had a day job this whole time?
Well, yeah. I worked it in the cleaners, valet shop, dry cleaners. And I heard about all the other musicians. I wanted to meet some of them. And follow guys like Pete Fleckner, I said, Scrapper Black, with Jesse Everett, and follow around with them. And we hung out together and learned something from them. Well, the first one, I met Peter Wistraw, Hammer Ray. Is the second Pee Wee Straw, you know. Him and he made one right for RC before I met him. Must have been in the late 30s or something. For RCA, because I saw the records, you know. But I didn't know what he did anything else for him or not.
Was he billing himself as Petey Wheatstraw, the devil's son-in-law? Was he known as Harmon Ray around town? How did you know
him?
Well,
a lot of people know him as Harmon Ray, but he sounded so much like Petey Wheatstraw. He could do everything that was just like him, you know, if you was in here. So that's why a lot of them in Indianapolis called him naming Petey Wheatstraw, you know. And he took me around, and we met Jesse Edwards playing with Jack Dupree. I've known Jack Dupree, too, since '41. I tell people now, I know Jack Dupree, or is he probably may have forgotten me, because he used to play the midnight shows every week, and Jesse Edwards played guitar. He's a very good guitar player. Now, Jesse, where he come from, I really don't know. Is he really out in Indianapolis? Jesse was a real guitar player. He was all the way around guitar player. He played, you know, the classic and the blues. And I think Jesse come up on the scrap or something. But then they were vessels like him and Pete Franklin play anything. Modern souls, I surrender to deal, anything. Not just blues, but it all around. Jesse, I think, got his style of playing like in D Notch and E from Scrapper. But I don't know. I guess he was just a natural player. He was real good. And Scrapper used to be around with us. We'd go get Scrapper. We'd go ahead and yeah, we'd drink fun.
Do you know whatever happened to Jesse Ellery?
I hear that Jesse had passed because I go over every so often. And I was told that they think he was passed. So all of them I call name is dead.
What had happened to Scrapper after Leroy died?
Steve, I'm not sure just like what the Scrapper did for his occupation. You know, we go get him sometime, and they set him, look up and play, him and Jesse. And tonight we get Pete Franklin over there, Pete Franklin with pardons. He went about 17 years old when I met him. And he was just tough in neighborhood, and they was tough. And Pete could do so many things.
Would you say that Pete Franklin had Scrapper's style all the way?
Yeah, he played style. Jesse Everett played style. And it looked like they put a little more in Scrapper did, you know. Because I guess, you know, as things go, time go by, they add more to it, you know, to the soul sound. When I switched to guitar, the first year I come now about guitar, I couldn't do anything with it. And I followed these guys, and they showed me some points and helped me out some with the guitar. You know, Pete used to tell me that I was going to be faster than him one day, which I never believed it, you know. And now his mother was nice to me. I'd go to their house, like we come here, and his sisters. And I met Dorothy when she was about 17. And Louise, too. And his father, he was a very nice man. They all just liked me. That was part of my home. Like, I go here on Jackson. Ms. Franklin, I call her Ms. Franklin, was a great blues lover. Something like the lady where I go here on Jackson. She played the blues all the time. They come in and sit down and talk. She put a blues record on or something. Ms. Franklin was the same way.
Yeah.
And she was a very nice lady. And they used to live on 29th, East 29th, years ago in the party. So they bought this home, and she died right there. Now the home they got, he died first, Mr. Franklin. Then she had children, and I think one through her leg, and then she finally died. She died, I think, in 50. We had to clean it on Broadway when she died, you remember?
Yeah, I remember when she died.
Yeah, Miss Franklin died cleaning in 53, I think it was.
Whatever happened to Guitar Pete?
Franklin?
Yeah.
Oh, Pete been dead a long time. Mm-hmm. Pete drank quite a bit. But he was a heck of a guitar player. Boy.
big. I thought it changed would help me, but I was wrong as I could be. But when I left home, I started right with bad company. But I met a Casey Brown. I thought I met a good fella. Ooh, but I met a Casey Brown. And he was trying to steal my woman. He was trying to bring me down. Teach me how to live, how to make money quick. Before I learned my lesson, I was caught in a great big trick. I called on Mr. Casey to see if he could set me free. But he was trying to steal my woman, trying to steal my gal from me. So I believe I'll go back home.
Help me, got to get myself together with the timing and everything. That was back in 44.
What kind of style was Homer playing?
Homer was just a regular a blues, you know, guitar player, him and Doug. They played different songs, like whatever song come out.
They weren't in a Big Bill style or a Furry Lewis or anybody in particular that you would put them next to?
No, not really, because they would just do maybe other people's songs mostly, you know, like Sonny Boy Williams, Doug did a Sail On, and they called name him Sail On around Kentucky and or East Chicago Heights, so I hear that. And Homer, he played guitar. You know, back in the 30s, thing, you play guitar, you have a string of people following you from here to the corner, just playing guitar, you. And sometimes you go from one house to another, and maybe 10 blocks, and it'd be people fighting, having a few drinks, having a good time back in those days. So those are guys really helped me come along with, started trying to get together with the blues, you know. When I first seen Dr. Clayton in Indianapolis, about 43, he come to the log cabin on the avenue, he was booked there. Matter of fact, I met Doc outside the club, and we talked a couple of times. And a lot of people said, well, that's not Doc Clayton, because he hit that bottle, hit me. And they said, everybody would be like, he'll be drinking, I guess, with not great. But he was famous, you know. So when I come to Chicago, a couple of years or so later, I met Doc again, 35th and Rose. I don't know why I picked up on Doc when I got to Chicago, but anyway, we got together. I don't know me, Sonny Boy, we were together or what, but Dr. Clayton, he was a heck of a singer, man. He was reversible. too. He could sing classic rhythm blues and church songs too. Had a terrific voice. And I didn't get a chance to meet Bill Gaither but one time. I met him one time. No, I met him through Peter Wichita Hammond Ray. So he knew one another because he went to the Army, World War II. And he got out the Army. I met him on the Avenue and talked with him. And Peter brought him by while I was there. And we talked with him. And I never get to see him anymore. So I think he died a year or so after that.
What, was he from Indianapolis or centered in there? That's where he was playing?
Yeah, I think he was. I guess he was there for many years, I suppose, over there before I came, you know. And he did a few things for, what was it, Decca, I think it was, after Leroy died. You know, he just took over, called Leroy Buddy.
I'm leaving this morning to never return again. I'm leaving this morning to never return again. I've done all a poor man could do, and I have tried to be a friend. You know I tried to love you, tried to treat you nice and kind. I've tried to love you, tried to treat you nice and kind. But you treated me so low down, till I just can't keep from crying. I went ragged and hungry, and you know I slept outdoors. I went ragged and hungry, and you know I've slept outdoors. Though you could wear silk and satin and your high-grade hose, goodbye, baby, do the best you can. Goodbye, baby, do the best you can. You should be satisfied. You can go live with your other man. Don't you hear that train a-coming to carry me away? Don't you hear that train a-coming to carry me away? I'm bidding you a lifetime goodbye, 1,000 years and a day.
I'll just break in for a second to remind you that you're tuned to Blues Before Sunrise, and we're listening to an extended interview with blues husband and wife, John and Grace Brim, who are based in Gary, Indiana.
What finally caused you to leave Indianapolis?
That's a long story, you know. After Indianapolis, I come up here looking for a friend of mine. We had her running, so she came up here. And Chicago. And I had people say, you know, I had two sisters here and an auntie at that time. And that's how it got me in Chicago.
Were they in Chicago proper or were they in Gary?
They were in Chicago.
So that's where you went before you came to Gary?
Oh, yeah, I was there. From 45 to 52 before we moved to Gary. I was playing, messing around with a guy called Edward Hollis. Doing our money, he called himself Sonny Boy. So my sister kept telling me, I said, well, I'm telling you, that guy's not the Sonny Boy William. You know. She said, I'll tell you what I'll do. The Sonny Boy will be down here on 35th between Atlanta and Parade. And so when he come back again, I told him about you. So somebody told you he wanted to meet me. So then one time she told me, come on, go down this place, this club on 35th. Somebody was going to be there. So I did. That's how I met John Lee Williams, you know. That was in about 46. I was playing with John Lee Williams when Mother Wild asked me, Mr., would you mind me playing a piece on you to get that? And somebody told me, John, that's, well, Muddy Waters, he had never made any record. And then 46, Purple Cat, West Madison Street.
What kind of a band did Sonny Boy keep when you saw him? How many
pieces?
Well,
at that time, he had a guy that did some calling with him named Memphis Jimmy, played piano. Called him Memphis Jimmy. He played piano for Sonny Boy. You know, a lot of his recording, Eddie Boy playing piano for him on some of his records there. But this is from Memphis Jimmy, kind of light-skinned boy. He died, well, I guess, a good while after that. After Sonny Boy and I didn't play, I'll make it short, a gig that I don't know what Sonny Boy, I don't know, some girl is talking to him, girl didn't talk to him, won't talk to me. And somebody said, well, I got the gig for us. Because we had played there, we got another friend of Bill. And when a guy named Johnny had a club on West Madison in the 2000 block. This guy was a very nice guy. He told me, he said, yeah, John, so you got Sonny Boy? Come on. I said, well, he had in the car, he ain't feeling too good. So he told us to come in for the week, you know. I got the gig, and he just kind of difficult about the girl, I think, and told me that we won't play no more over there. God didn't even play no more, didn't want us to play no more. So me and Homer Wilson were living the same place at that time. So we said we didn't believe that. So we didn't have no car now, so we go on the weekend at. That was on Friday night, I think, the next Saturday night. Son of, this time I met L.C. McKinley. He had L.C. McKinley playing guitar. He still had the gig. That's the truth. That's God's truth. I wouldn't lie on him.
How about some of the other ones? How did you meet Tampa Red?
Well, at Tampa, all the way out of Tampa, with Tampa, you know, we go out and play it. And we talk, and I really didn't play anything together. Tab and I, we didn't play anything together. But Big Meso, we were taken by, you know, they've been friends around by him and Johnny. Johnny Jones, he was piano player, had a little Meso style, you know. And I was playing with Tab at that time before he got with M.O. Jane. And that's how we go by and holler at Tampa. Me was playing right there next door to where I lived there on 35th. A little club, him and L.C. McKinley. And after that, I go down. But first playing with him, and we didn't play together. Well, we go up to his house. See, he was a headquarter. Just like you got your company. Everybody come to your house rehearsing for a recording. That's what Tampa was, 34th and State. So we go up out sometime.
Would you rehearse or would you just watch the other folks play?
Well, Melrose was living. He's the right fella that handled a lot of dudes out of for. For RCA Victor, you know, back in that time, you know, Tampa and Memphis and Lonnie Johnson and all of them, and he come through Mayro, and he handled all that part. And they come out on Bluebird or whatever, you know.
Right.
But it's still owned by RCA. So they go up to Tampa Red, and Mayro will come up and listen to you. But he's the one who gave the okay.
Did you ever try to make records for him?
I didn't really try to really get with RCA at that time. I just think I wasn't ready, you know. Really, really good enough to try to do anything, you know.
Wasn't the H&T where Tampa used to play? Wasn't that across the street from his house pretty much?
Yeah, it was. Tampa was Norval on the opposite side of the street. You know, like say right we here, maybe down out near the corner. And Tampa was living there. H&T is on the west side of the street just like this house here. In the 3400 block. And Tampa's in the 3400 block. But it was, you know, that's obvious down the street near the corner. And H&T's in there 35th, you know.
How did you get the gig there?
I don't know. Somebody told us this color fella named Red was managing that place for the white fella. That they needed a Robin Nighthawk. Was playing now, I think, when he made Annie Lee, Sweet Black Angel. And they left town. Robin Nighthawk, they said his wife played drum when he was playing at H&T. And she played drum, and Robin played guitar. And that's how come I think they wanted us, because Grace blew the harp, and I was playing guitar. And we went down and talked to him, and we got the gig. Then I don't know what I didn't have two or three pieces at that time.
Who was in the band? You and who else?
Me, Grace, and a piano player named Willie Smith. I don't know what ever happened to Willie Smith. So we had ever got up in the bright lights then at all. And we was doing pretty good. And Meso, and Willie Smith, could I remember Meso started with us.
What did Grace play at this point? Was she on drums or on harmonica?
Well, she was on harmonica first. And, you know, I didn't know Grace but could blow for a long time. They're about 48. I came in from work, and I heard about blowing harp. So I asked her, where's the fella at? He said, I said, where's the man at? She said, no man. I said, who's the blowing? She said, I said, you mean tell me you blow a harp and blow in time like that? And she said, I guess so. We got the guitar, got the harp. It worked out a little, you know. I didn't know she blew it. So that's how it started working with me. Then she got a drum lesson from Odie Payne. And bought a set of nice set of drums and started drumming.
About when did she start drumming?
She was playing drums in 1950 or 51, I don't know.
Shine on, with my guitar in my hand. I'm gonna leave her walking with my guitar in my hand. If I don't find my baby, God knows why I made that.
I just wonder how the two of you met.
Oh, me and her. Yeah.
Okay, let me see.
1946.
You and Homer Wilson was playing music. Yeah.
Yeah, me and Homer were playing two guitars.
Yeah, they was downstairs in the basement where I lived at. Where we lived at, and he held it down there.
And
that's how we met.
And that ran like in 46.
And how long did it take you, Grace, till you started playing harmonica or till you came out in public with it?
Oh, not long. See, when I was a kid, not a kid, so my oldest sister's husband played harmonica. And you know how that is. You run around and you get it. And he tell me you blow it like this. My daddy blowed a little bit too, you know. So one day he came home, and I was at home, and he heard me, and he came in the house. He says, where's the man? I said, what man? And he said, I heard a harmonica. I said, yeah, but that was me. It wasn't no man. So he said, oh, I'm going to put you to work. And about a couple of weeks, there we were.
Yeah, I was telling him that you go on the matinee at 8:06 or 9 Wentworth. Mm-hmm. You would go out and blow, boy, people would come. Just to come on a Sunday to have a matinee. And I could hear her blow the harp because it was strange. In that time, you know, a lady blow the harp.
Were you blowing like anybody in particular, Grace? Like Sonny Boy, Jazz Gillum?
No. Nobody but to my sister's husband. That's the way he blew. Yeah. You know. So that's, I learned how to do that like he was doing. That's just his style, and that was, I picked it up. It was my style.
Grace, what time you started the drums? 50, 51?
I started the drums in 51, because after Boom and Boom was born, yeah. 50, 51.
Yeah, yeah. Because, come to the house there, Odie Payne. He's coming, house.
Was Boom and Boom in 50 or 51? 51, because I bought him before he was born, and I started playing after he was born.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I tried to steal him, I can win exactly.
Everybody had a chance to meet. At last I found that man in that man.
Why did you make the move to Gary?
All of my family was here.
All her people's here. Her close people, you know, brother and sister, mother and father.
I see. So this whole time, were you still in a day job? You were playing music, but you were in a day job?
Well, we had our own business. I worked at record all the time. We had our own record shop and cleaners.
We came over here and opened one up.
And then we had a machine. We moved. We got a place where we could have living quarters in the back over here, overhead in Chicago, same summer. So we moved over here. And
father and son cleaner.
Father and son, record shop and cleaner.
You had a record shop and cleaners together?
Uh-huh.
You right. Sell the yeah. latest records?
Oh, yeah. So I know when Elmo may dust my broom, I know how it will come every morning and midnight. I know the year.
I remember when Ray Charles records wouldn't even sell. We couldn't sell Ray Charles records.
Right.
And what was that record he came out, bro?
Right, when we were on Vincent, we couldn't sell Ray Charles records. He was with us Swing Time out of California. But when we moved over here, it should have been me with the real fine chicken, that ice cream and cake. That started selling for Atlanta, I think. Then they didn't come out with the other one. Yeah, so later something. I got up on the way across town.
Yeah, that's
he ain't look back.
It went then.
He ain't look back.
Yeah.
Did owning a record shop and selling records and dealing with record companies, did that help you at all as musicians to make records?
No. As
far as
I would see, it didn't help
us. No, it didn't help us. We were just into
we were just selling the records to make the money.
And we was into that before, you know, we got into the record and cleaning. We was into, you know, playing.
There's the big blues scene in Chicago everybody knows about. There's also a blues scene in Gary, wasn't there? Were there taverns and clubs that were booking live blues here?
Yeah. We had a club like Pulaski Bar over in 19th Virginia. They booked a different club, buddy, with Walter and me and Jimmy Reed played over. We played over all along, I guess, 5 or 6 years, didn't we, Greg?
Yeah, one on 15th and Adams. What was the name of that one?
The club, my buddy guy played over here a pretty good while, 3 or 4 years, two at this new club.
Also on 13th and Adams, we played that quite a while.
Yeah, we played that. Larry. I'm trying to think of the name of the club down here on 15th Adams, very well we know. Roadhouses. There'd be a lot of roadhouses right back here. You know where I met you at? Used to be 4 or 5 roadhouses out there. And we'd leave playing like 1 o'clock in the morning. We'd go to roadhouse and play sometimes at 4 or 5 in the morning. Oh, Gary used to jump. This used to be a money town.
But did Gary have its own blues people? In addition to the folks we know from Chicago? I mean, I guess the two of you are the best-known blues players to come out of Gary.
Well, I think so. Well-known. They had a lot of, you know, musicians, great musicians that was playing blues, you know, like jazz and some of our classics. Like Charles Ferguson, Jazz Ferguson, we called him. Mars Lane, True Crump. We got quite a few musicians here in Gary, yeah. Go way back.
What was Eddie Taylor and Jimmy Reed's connection to Gary? Were they from Gary or were they from Chicago? Did they ever live here in Gary?
Jimmy Reed stayed here for a while, but they lived in Chicago. Jimmy lived with us.
Jimmy and his family stayed with us a while.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Then they moved.
He stayed with us when he made his big hit, You Don't Have to Go, in 55.
He was working in the steel mill when we first met him.
It's funny how we met Jimmy Reed. Grace and I.
Beso was sick.
Who was it?
Beso was sick, and we didn't have nobody to play with. The lady told us that she knew where a harmonica player was, and so she told me where they lived, and I went across the street to Jimmy's house. That's how we met him.
The Club Alibi?
Yeah, that was the name of it. Uh-huh.
Right on 90 Mackinac, which was, yeah, which is 90 in there.
And Jimmy stayed in the same 100 block.
And Jimmy lived across the street, like down there. She said, I know, boy, John, that Mike could play with y'all. He come in and set up, and I let him play sometime. And this was in the 40s, wasn't it? This was in the 40s, about 49?
Yeah, somewhere along there.
So, I said, did he play? All right? She said, I don't know where he can play with y'all. And I said, but I'll sit and get him if it's all right.
I said, yes.
Did you go get him?
Yeah, I went down.
So he came over there.
I walked in the door and told him who I was. He said, okay, Cutting Peaches, I'll go with you. That's what he called me. Now, he called me that all the time.
And he come over and said, I don't know, I'll play with y'all. I said, I'll try if you want me. I said, sure, we do.
He had a real nice wife, too.
So Jimmy, we played that night, but I helped us again. And we didn't see Jimmy anymore by a couple of years. So, and we heard the record out, you know, the feeling these gentlemen put out on Jimmy. And Grace and I said, it sounded like the fella played with us that time. So then the advertising radio over here, you know, they played East Chicago High, it's Black and Tan. So, club over there. So we get in the car, me and Grace, we go somewhere, and it was Jimmy Reed. And Brian John Davis, I think, you know, piano player.
Sure.
John Davis. And Jimmy Reed. I don't know who was playing drum with him, but then we had got back with one another, you know, from being on.
Did Kansas City Red, he spent some time in Gary?
Yes,
Red would be over here. Red would be everywhere.
He lived in Chicago, though.
Red and Earl Hooker would. I met Red, Kansas City Red, back in the 50s. And we had our cleaning shop and everything. You remember, Gray?
Mm-hmm.
That Earl Hooker brought him by. Because we kind of raised Earl Hooker in a way. I mean, huh? So they hooked up together and played together a lot. Earl Hooker brought him back. Why? We brought him from Kansas City or wherever. And as I've been knowing Red all a long time.
One more time, you're tuned to Blues Before Sunrise, and we're listening to an interview with John and Grace Brim. Back to our interview.
Summertime is here, need something to keep you cool. Now summertime is here, need something to keep you cool. Hey little girl, I've got something for you. I'm your ice cream man, stop me when I'm passing by. When I'm passing by, now I cool your blue girl, guarantee I'll satisfy. I got cream sandwich, Dixie cup, popsicle, and push-ups too. I'm your ice cream man. Stop me when I'm passing by. Now I cool your blue girl. Get you a
will come along just about 11 o'clock. You'll come along just about 11 o'clock. Now if you let me cool you off this time, you'll be my regular star. I got all flavors, including pineapple too. I got all flavors, including pineapple too. Now one of my flavors, girl, got me to ride for you.
We got a radio hooking away. I mean, Well, see, at that time, got around 50 and 51, that I said that we started playing more or less professional, like, maybe a little bit before that I was, than me and my wife. So then Elle and all of her friends, Elle C. McKinley, so Elle would come over our house all the time, say, like I was, and eat with us, and his mother, I mean, his mother, like me and Grace. And he'd just be by my house a lot of times, you know.
And he had his own little group he played with. Mm-hmm. And he had his own little group, and he'd come go down the street. One had a washbowl, one had a tub.
Yeah, they used to play on the street.
They play on the streets out there. Oh, they had a band. They were,
I guess,
it was nothing but
12,
kids.
13 years old then. Yeah. So we've been knowing each other since about 15, 16 grade.
Come to the house the whole time.
He was about 15, 16, wasn't he?
Yeah. About that age when we first met him. But he was a good guitar player at that time.
Ms. Hooker.
He had all of, he had three or four young guys with him, you know, and they would be sitting up out there, one had a tub, I won't forget that, and washbowl, and then.
Man, he could play country and western, man.
Oh, he could play anything.
Yeah, he could play anything, too.
Cuss you out on his guitar, he could do all of that.
He was just a good guitar player,
I've never heard nobody say the things on the guitar that he could say on his guitar. Sit his guitar down, walk over there and walk back, and that guitar still be saying what he put on that foot to say. He say, forget you, that guitar be still saying, forget you, forget you, forget you. And he gone, come back, and the guitar still saying, forget you. I never saw it before.
We'll be right back.
that people say that some people didn't make it, get over pretty easy. But it's been a long struggle with a lot of us, a little water, muddy water, and they didn't get what they got. It's a jump. It was a lot of work, and work for nothing almost a lot of times. So we had to play for like $2 or $3 a night because it was in the blood to play and play public where it makes you feel better. Just like now, if you're playing out in a club or something, you feel better. And just sitting around doing this, you playing your drum, you want somebody to hear you play that drum. And if I'm playing guitar, somebody here because I like it, I believe somebody's going to like it too. But it wasn't no money in it for us for a long time. All of us used to be together over at 3609 Windwork. Son Joe, Mary Minnie, Will Mayborn, and Eddie Boyd. So they have a matinee every day by this time. And Muddy and them were playing out in the water with them. And Muddy first made out catch fish, swimming in the deep. Then they were plugging it so good, you know, kind of brought Muddy on up, you know. And all of us would meet there on Sunday for the matinee.
Did you have anything to do with Jewtown? Were you down in Maxwell Street at all?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, hooking in. Go out with them. We go there like on Sunday, you know. And we play all around the front that end. And then they play in the back now somewhere back over there. And it'd be three or four different bands.
They must have spots down there for the people to play. You know, people let them hook their stuff in there.
Right on the street. No, we play right on the street.
Yeah, that's it. But they'd be on the streets, but, you know, you could hook it up in their streets.
We made nice bread out there, man. People again, down there. Again, throwing that money.
About what years would you say that was when you were down there?
Oh, somewhere like about 46, 47, 48.
Before you ever made records?
Yeah. Yeah, sure would.
Thank you.
That's our number one of our interview with John and Grace Brim. By the way, a complete transcription of this interview can be found in the very first of my books for the University of Illinois Press. It's called Blues Before Sunrise, The Radio Interviews. We are going to pause and identify the station. We'll be back with our number two of our interview, John and Grace Brim, out of Gary, Indiana.
Now give my baby best, best of everything she wants. Yet and still she cheating on me. To the movie, but don't stay home all night long. Yet you never come home, baby. Until the break of dawn, that ain't right. Thank you.